to get intimate with Checkpoint Intimates.
Yes, you're here with another episode of Checkpoint Intimates. We are your weekly gaming podcast where two members of the Checkpoint team go one-on-one and get downright dirty and intimate on a particular gaming topic. My name is Elliot. This week I'm joined by the lovely Edie.
Hi.
Hi.
You're lovely too.
Aw, I'm okay. I mean, let's not sell me too highly.
No, okay. You're average. I admit it.
Edie, what are we talking about this week? And you better say it in the kind of passion that this topic requires.
We're talking about outrage culture. I want to slap the table, but that'll sound awful. So just imagine I'm bashing the table. Outrage culture.
I'm already imagining it. And yeah, we are, because outrage culture is this, it's almost like a phenomenon in gaming, sometimes for good, sometimes for bad.
Not just gaming, because of the online platform that we all have these days, it's, everyone wants to be as vocal as possible on it, so it's a phenomenon that we've been seeing pretty much in every subcategory, every demographic.
I mean,
but
everybody
in
wants
gaming,
to,
yes.
Everybody wants to have their opinion right, and everybody thinks their opinion is right, and everybody wants to be as loud as they possibly can, because I think the internet now allows that, right?
Yeah.
Before it was like you're screaming into an empty room, and now you're screaming and people are listening.
Yeah.
And so gamers have recognized that fact, and they're using their voice to really let companies know when they've done something wrong. And this is kind of spewed into what we're talking about, outrage culture. And I think sometimes we've seen really good examples of how outrage culture has helped change the gaming landscape.
Yeah, I mean, it's the squeaky wheel that gets the grease, isn't it? Like, if you're not vocal enough, then the game company will be like, oh, okay, I mean, I guess it is a problem, but we can prioritize other things over it, and then it never really gets addressed again. But if you are very vocal about it, and it becomes a problem for the company's image, and then they see it as a real problem. So it really does get results. Like, being really, really angry about something definitely makes a company take more notice, takes you more seriously. At the same time, though, it can be used for evil.
I mean, sometimes it feels really dumb. I've got to admit, as somebody who has themselves been outraged at something a video game has done and realized that I'm actually getting really worked up about something that is utterly stupid.
What was it? What was the thing you got angry about?
Oh, I mean, even stuff like recently, like with Epic Game exclusivity. Like, I'll be like so mad that this game I was looking forward to playing has gone exclusive, and then the developers have made some really lame statement where it's like, oh, we just want what's best for the game. It's like, well, no, you want money in your pocket. And it's like, wait, why am I getting so mad? I can play it on Epic. I understand why exclusivity deals exist.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's not the ideal situation for me as a consumer, but at the same time, like the developers have a right to sell on whatever platform they want. They're not necessarily an evil corporation for deciding that they want stability for their development team and for their workers and for themselves as a studio, and therefore they take, you know, the option of selling exclusivity rights to another company. Like, that doesn't make them terrible people. And all of a sudden, here I am, like, fuming at, like, nothing.
Yeah, it's, and this is how outrage culture is, or, like, call-out culture, as it's also called, is formed. Like, if it's just you, that's one thing. But if you and thousands, like, tens, hundreds of thousands of other people all share your opinion, it can be really easy to like form this echo chamber, like, yeah, you know, we're right, and so we can get really angry because we know we're right. Whereas if you actually stop to think about the trouble it's causing you, it actually comparatively is quite minor. Like, oh, I have to download a different gaming server, like, it's kind of inconvenient for me, I guess.
And look, the reality of the, like, of outrage culture is quite nuanced, because I'm not here saying that people shouldn't be upset at Epic, because there's definitely, like, there's definitely things to get mad about, but it's about also, you know, the balance, right? If I see news about, you know, Riot Games or some studio who is being incredibly sexist and toxic and overworking their employees to the point where they're getting physically ill, depressed, and sick, And if that to me is just as outrageous as a game going Epic Game exclusive, maybe my priorities aren't really balanced here. Like, maybe some of this energy I'm putting forward towards these slight anti-consumer practices that slightly, you know, a small bump in the road for me could be going towards way more important issues. But then again, like, everyone's allowed to be upset at what they're allowed to be upset at.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but this, it can edge towards, like, online abuse, you know? Like,
oh, there's some abuse out there.
Yeah, there's definitely some abuse going, and
if you're sending death threats and stuff like that, I think you've crossed the line.
Yeah,
I don't see any reason why death threats are mandatory in the gaming
space.
Necessary
in any situation, really.
It's really unnecessary, and so outrage culture can go too far, but it's done good in the past, right?
Yeah, we definitely identified a couple of places where outrage culture has done really well. Like you say, with the Riot Games, like, situation, that situation hasn't been fully resolved yet, but it definitely got everyone's outrage at hearing the news about what a toxic workplace it seemed to be. It did get Riot Games to come out and say, hey, we're going to try and do better, whether or not they have achieved that or are taking steps. Like, that's still, haven't
these things take time
that.
And like, you hope that they're doing the right thing, if not because it's the right thing to do, but because it helps them and their public image. Like, either way, they're getting the results they want to get. But yes, we haven't actually seen, like, much of a positive result yet at all, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah, regardless of that, like, they heard the outrage and got the idea that that is no longer tolerated by the general population, which is great. Another example was Star Wars Battlefront, where they made a lot of playable characters really hard to unlock, meaning that characters had to grind. I mean, players had to grind for days. And the company released a statement trying to say that it's because they wanted people to feel really, really rewarded when they finally got the character, when at the same time it was very obvious that really it's because they wanted to convince players to purchase, like, the microtransactions, like the extra weapons, the experience points.
The loot boxes,
let's
not forget. And, like, I think Battlefront is such a prime example of outrage culture, because I actually can't think of when gamers came together and got so outraged, that angry. Like, that is almost the peak of outrage culture right there, because you mentioned it before, it's like the most downvoted comment on Reddit history. It was talked about for so long during the process and after the process, so much so that they've actually changed a lot about Battlefront, and they had to, like, pull microtransactions all together at launch and then, like, implement them in a different way later. Like, the outrage over Battlefront 1 not only changed that game, but I remember people making announcements and stuff like, this game will have no loot boxes, and the crowd would cheer.
Yeah.
And that's because of Battlefront 1.
Yeah, and it's because of that controversy. Like, it was so loud that, you know, legislators actually noticed and were like, hey, you know, what's going on here? And then that's when they noticed how close to gambling the loot boxes were. And that's when laws started to get put into place. So, like, it definitely can do really, really good things. But it can also contribute to some really petty arguments. And I called it kind of like a making a mountain out of a molehill. And the situation...
What? Us gamers?
Us
never.
Gamers? No, never. Please. Never at all. I remembered a couple of years ago when Cuphead was only first released, and it was a great game, everyone loved it, but a few people here and there, and it had been in discussion since before the game had even been released, is that the art style, as beautiful as it was, had its roots in racist caricatures from the 1930s.
Yes.
And all it was a discussion. It was,
nobody, I don't think anybody was saying that the game Cuphead contained racist caricatures.
Yeah.
But they were saying that 1930s cartoons, which is the aesthetic the game was basing itself off of, absolutely suffered from a problem of racist caricatures. And it did. Go back and look. It's like...
It's watch someone on YouTube. It's it's worse than you imagine.
But as soon as anybody brings up that fact, this says, oh, this game is referencing 1930s caricatures, but thankfully it doesn't contain any of the racist caricature that was found within it. Oh my God, people like found that, latched onto it, and was like, how dare anybody use the word racist within within this context?
People started reacting to the discussion saying, how dare you call Cuphead racist, even though nobody was calling Cuphead racist. They were discussing the roots of the game's art style and how it was based in racism, but as soon as the word racism popped up, like, it was too late. The outrage was already here. How dare you blame a game just for using an art style?
Yeah,
and it has faded now, thankfully, because it is so silly. And this is something really I'll say. The silly stuff does tend to fade. The silly outrage fades and gets forgotten. But the real outrage, the deserved outrage, stays a lot longer. So I feel like that's a really good thing. But I remember during that time, so many YouTube videos, so many angry video game men on the internet were just talking about... Oh, it just made me laugh, really.
Yeah, and you said it earlier, the term manufactured outrage. And some of this, I think, is applicable here. Now, I think definitely there's this weird phenomenon that happens, and I reckon it needs a name if it doesn't already, but the phenomenon is where the outrage to the outrage is bigger than the outrage itself. As far as like one, two, three, maybe four people, or like a very small handful of the internet will say one thing, and then 700, you know, blogs and YouTube stars and whatever will react negatively against that. And it's like, and you're getting your views then through these, by saying, like, how dare anybody say Cuphead is racist, when in reality, it's, like, such a small handful of people that nobody is listening to their voices anyway. You're giving them a voice by being outraged on the outrage.
I would never have known people were even discussing it. Like, I personally think it's worth a discussion, but this is the problem with outrage culture. No discussion actually gets done, or barely any, I guess, because we all jump so quickly to that angry yelling, those, you know, caps lock on, you know, like, and to hashing out like a paragraph, got to get your opinion out there in like as big a font as possible, so that nobody gets their point across.
But here's why some of it's manufactured. Some of it is definitely organic. It's people reacting to what they believe is out there, even if it's not out there.
Yeah.
But some of it's manufactured because the reality is you get clicks and hits on your and views on whatever.
The more exclamation points your title has, the more clicks you get.
I was just watching, I don't even remember who it was, but somebody in their video said that they do like an end of year kind of game of the year thing, and their game of the year video gets consistently half the amount of views as their worst games of the year video.
Yeah.
And it's like,
people
love
discourse.
People love to hate things. And people like will, as soon as you post a video or a comment or a blog about, hey, these people are trashing on this, they're terrible, like, let's get them, let's like fight back. That's what gets you all the views and all the hits and all the, and you know, and that's why people manufacture this kind of outrage, even if it didn't really exist in the first place, as just a good technique to get themselves notoriety. But it's really dodgy.
It's just so fun to hate something, isn't it?
It's so fun.
It's so cathartic to just kind of just, yeah, that thing sucks, I'm glad you agree. You know, like, this is why, do you remember the angry video game nerd on YouTube? Or, well, before YouTube, actually, I think. But, you know, it was a joke at first. It was supposed to be a satire, and then people just stopped taking it as satire. He would pick up an old NES game that there was no point in getting mad over because it was so old and nobody remembered it, and he would just get unnecessarily angry at what a bad NES game it was. And that was the joke, you know? He was getting mad at something that didn't matter, but then so many people just liked it unironically. They were like, yeah, that game sucks. And it was just like, what? Why are you getting angry about this?
Oh, people love to get angry.
Yeah. And I mean, he's one of the most beloved gaming YouTube creators, really, video creators. And so it launched so many other people's YouTube careers, all off being outraged.
Yeah, I mean, and outrage culture has permeated in so many different directions. We see it with, like, obviously YouTube stars and Twitch players and blogs and stuff like that. But also just think about stuff like Steam review bombs or just review bombs on any platform. Like people love to show their outrage no matter what it is. But funnily enough, they don't tend to love to show their outrage via, like, actually paying for a product. It seems like people would prefer to, like, be mad at something and then buy it anyway.
Yeah, well, it's posting something on the internet is...
You don't miss out on anything.
You just said it. And then if you buy the product anyway, no one's ever going to know.
Yeah, and it is a little bit like that. But I remember one of the silliest review bombs, in my opinion. Like, obviously, everyone's got their own opinions on this kind of stuff. But I remember when Shadow of the Tomb Raider was review bombed because it went on, like, a 50% discount 3 months after release or something like that.
Oh, that's right.
And people were super frustrated and super mad. They're like, how dare you? Like, I paid full price for this. Like, why would you, like, go on a half price sale already?
Do they not understand how Steam works?
Well, I mean, that's part of it, right? Like, Steam obviously has these big sales. But, you know, the publishers are in charge of what goes on sale and how much they're going to put it on for. And people were really pissed. They were like, I can't believe I paid full price. I'll never pay full price for a Square Enix game ever again in my life because you don't value us as customers if you're going to put something on sale. And I always thought to myself, like, why does it matter? Like, when you made that purchase, when you said, I will pay full price for this game, you did so because you thought it was worth it. And it wasn't the fact that you played the game after and thought, actually, this game isn't worth it. That's not what changed your mind. What changed your mind is the fact that other people now get it for a cheaper price.
Yeah.
It hasn't changed anything about you and your enjoyment.
Like, I totally get that it's frustrating to pay full price for something and then a couple of weeks later, you could have got it at half price. I would be angry at that.
I mean, it's not a couple of weeks, though. I think it was at least a solid couple of months. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, still, though, the frustration is that you perceive to have lost money. That's the feeling. Like, oh, God, I lost money on this. But it is silly to review bomb it.
But isn't that always going to happen? If I buy a game, you know, 6 years after release and then a week later it goes on special, like, we don't know when things go on special. That's the point. Every time you make a purchase, you're deciding in that moment it's worth that price.
Was it a temporary sale?
Yeah.
It was. Okay, it wasn't like they've permanently changed the price.
No.
Okay, yeah. That is definitely silly, I guess.
But it's like, but it obviously annoyed a lot of people, and it's not something that would have annoyed me, but it annoyed a lot of people so much so that you can't, like, judge the game based on its reviews anymore because of how prolific that review bomb was.
Yeah, true.
It's, like, totally changed the perception of that game, and to me, that's, like, that's a case of gamer outrage culture that's gone too far and is so unnecessary.
Yeah, it's, this is another thing I've noticed about outrage culture. It's unwieldy. Like, it affects so many other things than just the thing you're mad at. Like, these gamers were angry at the publisher for making a sale or making it go on sale, I mean, so soon after the release date, but their outrage harmed the game itself by this review bomb, you know? Like,
yeah.
So outrage culture can get some wheels turning, but it can also damage some stuff that wasn't its primary target.
Well, outrage culture, the idea behind it is supposed to be that it creates positive change for the future, right?
Yeah.
Hey, this developer's like, oh, we put our game on sale, people didn't like it, we were not going to put our game on sale anymore. And it's like, oh, hang on. No, our outrage culture had the opposite effect. Like, no, we as consumers like sales. I don't know why we're being so mad about this.
Yeah, well, kind of like the same point as it being unwieldy. Like, not only can it damage stuff that you didn't mean to damage, it can also confuse the message.
Yeah.
Like, unless you're very clear about what you're mad at, such as the Battlefront review, like, it was pretty clear what they were mad at. Like,
sure.
In that, if you review bomb a game, sure, they probably have someone that's going to read a bunch of the reviews, but at the end of the day, they're just going to look at the scoring on Steam, and it's going to be on, like, 60%, and they're like, oh, God, okay, so they're mad about the sale? They're mad about the game? Like, it gets messy.
It gets really messy.
It's a messy thing.
Yeah, it's like you're swinging your limbs around, and sometimes you'll hit something, and it'll be like that's something a really you want to hit, like Hitler. And sometimes you'll hit something like a little puppy, and that's outrage
that's
culture.
That's a great image. I can just imagine a like really angry gamer just like throwing a spitting the dummy, you know, so to speak, and just like hitting Hitlers and puppies and all sorts of things.
Oh, those poor Hitlers. Anyway, yeah. That is all the time we've got. We've been talking about outrage culture and some of the positive and negative effects it can have. Edie, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
My name has been Elliot, and join us next week because more intimate goodness is coming up.
You've been listening to Checkpoint Intimates. If you enjoyed this podcast, please rate and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher.